I'd like to begin extending a very warm welcome to everyone to the online Dharma Hall. My name's Nathan. I'm calling in today from Soggy, Dorset. I hope you're doing well. Just invite you, if you'd like to, you can use the chat function to welcome each other, introduce yourself, say hello, whatever you wish to add there. It can be really a nice way of welcoming all of us and arriving fully, and also arriving into a better sense of each other. So the sense of community, the sense of sangha, can be really supported by a little hello from each person who wishes to. No pressure. So those of you who are familiar with the form of these will know it quite well. We tend to start off, so shortly we'll have a meditation, and after the meditation I share a little reflection. Over the last few sessions we've been exploring a particular aspect of the teachings called the bases of success, and we'll move on to the next of those today. Then after that reflection and meditation, really open the space for a little bit more sharing. Could be some questions, could be your own reflections, things that have come up from this session, something else that's going on in your practice that you feel would be helpful to bring into the space together. And then we'll see. If there's time at the end and there's interest, we can have some smaller breakout rooms where you can just gather in smaller clusters and spend a little bit of time together. It could be a really beautiful way of supporting ourselves, our practice, and sense of community and connection with a broader sense of the community here. You know, you really never know who you'll end up meeting, who you'll end up getting to hear from there. So also a nice part of these offerings. So if you'd also like to, and you find it of benefit, we can just spend a moment just before we begin anything in our life, just having a clear sense of what did I come here for? What did I come here to give? What am I interested in supporting in body, heart and mind at this time? And actually this would be particularly pertinent for one of the bases of success, could even be kind of boiled down to intentionality. You know, what do we bring to this moment? What is it we're actually trying to do? What is it that we deeply value? So you could ask this question in a sense of what do you sense that you or the world is calling for at this time? It could be deeper understanding or more harmony or compassion or whatever. It could be something very specific, like in your life you want some more of this right now because of recent circumstances or recent relationship, how they are. So it can be personal, it can be specific, it can be general, and we'll just put those into the chat as another wave of kind of deepening our connection here with each other. So it's always inspiring to read each other's intentions, and sometimes it inspires us to maybe upgrade ours. So we already have healing in the space there. To be with what is. Steadiness and calm. And I think that we can notice, maybe with certain words, steadiness, calm, maybe they already invite those qualities as we say them to ourselves. Oh, calm. It's like a little reminder. It's like, oh yeah, I can calm. I can relax, yeah. To tune into love. Maybe you can just immediately reach for that dial. Just, it's just over there. Oh, now I get it. Now I get it. Purpose. clarity. Silence. There's a particular way of listening where we get to pick up silence. A calm, open, bright heart. Quite some nice harmonics there in those particular notes of quality. Yeah. Joy and equanimity. Space. Faith. I'm just looking at the list randomly. It's getting beautifully long. That's really inspiring, yeah. Belonging. In each of those moments, you know, maybe we resonate with some of those, you know, maybe our original intention was quite simple and now we've got this whole cluster, this whole gathering. So, me, I want to be your intention. Yeah, maybe they can, maybe it can be a cluster, maybe it can be a gathering. Compassion. Acceptance. It's, you know, they're all just so beautiful, so worthy. And it kind of, there's a part of me that feels like we could just sit here together and then occasionally, you know, someone can unmute and just call out an intention. Say, yes. Yeah, that one too. I like them all. But gather those that feel most meaningful for you, or the one that feels most meaningful, and we'll bring it with us into the meditation. And let it have its space in the relatively grounded, relatively upright posture that you're going to take for the session. And let's have 20 minutes of relatively quiet practice, but I'll put out some reminders. Maybe the first reminder is actually, let's just do this slowly. Transition in slowly. Quiet and down slowly. No rush. Maybe just as others have an appreciation that we've shown up, that we're here, that we're in support of each other, can we also have some appreciation for ourselves for showing up? Maybe we could have gone elsewhere, could have been bringing heart and mind to some other moment, but decided to be here, decided to support those intentional qualities, support what's meaningful and beautiful for us. As we stay slowed down, just need to keep reminding ourselves, possibly, just slowly. Slowly start to tune into maybe the breath flowing, maybe the sounds arising and passing, qualities, phenomena which bring us into a sense of presence. Because they're only happening now. When we're paying attention, we have to be now with them. Not the idea of how they should be, not the idea of how they were yesterday or minutes ago. What's here now? And the last thing I'll say before inviting you into the quiet of your practice, the intentionality of your practice, is as you meet this here, this moment of now, can that intention be the atmosphere for attention? That intention you shared, so openness. Can there be a quality of openness to the breath, to the sounds, to this expression of now, if that was your intention, or kindness. Kindness to all aspects. Just notice if you're paying attention, what you intended to pay attention to. Or if you're paying attention with the intention you wished to bring to this moment. It wouldn't be a real surprise if the mind had wandered elsewhere, the intellect had come up with a more interesting phenomena to ruminate upon than breath or sounds. It's part of the skill of the intellect to find what's most interesting, not to be satisfied, even if it is perhaps the most nourishing, most beautiful thing we could pay attention to. It's to keep its options open. All kinds of other conditions are adding to this moment. It's not just dependent on our intention. But allowing for that, slowing down in the midst of that, and appreciating that you're showing up again, that persistence, making the effort, and relaxing into what's here, bringing back that intentional atmosphere once again. Resolving to intend to meet well. noticing how awake is your quality of intention in this moment. What would support it to be more alive in your life? Is there any deep gratitude for your practice? And I hope that it was a enjoyable, supportive session of practice together. I really want to share my appreciation for you coming and participating in this session, and for many of you, you know, keeping the doors of the online Dharma Hall of Gaia House, you know, open and inviting. So it's a real delight to see this space still continuing to gather good support, and yeah, I'm really happy to see that, and really happy to be here also participating in keeping it running. So many of you will know, you know, Gaia House is offering this space to us freely, and that leaves us free to support Gaia House and the teachings that are offered here with Dana. And yeah, so we're really It's being offered with no expectation that something has to happen in return. So really know that. And particularly, if these are, difficult times for you, then know that, the doors of this online Dharma hall are held wide open for you to be here and feel supported and make connections with teachings, make connections with this community. And yeah, there's no expectation that you will have to give something in return. It's also really worth remembering that coming here with our good intentions is a dana, is an act of generosity. And coming here and supporting and participating is a great gift that you give to me and to all of us and to Gaia House. But of course, we can't just imagine that it will be supported. It does take at least some of us to do something about that. So if you can, please, offer support to Gaia House, and to those who come here and support the teachings. And what that looks like for you is really, should be wide in its possibilities. So might be a good day for a stretch and a challenge, and oh, maybe I'll give a bit more than I think I should, or maybe it's a day where we, look after ourselves and support that. So kind of exploring what generosity looks like for you. And yeah, there's a lovely image in the teachings that the Buddha says, actually in relationship to not receiving any goodness or any benefit or any kind of sweetness in the heart from these practices. And he says, "Do not say, it will not come to me. Drop by drop, the water pot is filled." And so in that same spirit, just drop by drop, the dana pot will be supported. And it doesn't need to be some enormous act of generosity. But perhaps, gathering together, we participate in the dana, financially and not. The dana of keeping this space open. And you'll know there are links from where you came from to get there, and also there's some links now in the chat that can support that. So the second link is a direct link for me for coming here to share these teachings and practices. You can also donate to me through Gaia House. If you're interested from that second link, the dependentorigination.org website, we also have many more offerings. So if you like the style of teachings that I share here, ways of practicing, we have various things there, including tonight, 5 o'clock UK time, there's the Shaping the World drop-in group freely offered that explores, kind of combining our practices and living our practices, speaking our practices and engaging with the world. So we could say we have the skill of changing how the world appears to us, and we can use that to utilize the skill of changing how the world appears for others. And if that sounds complex and interesting, it's actually very simple and engaging. So if you want to hear more about that, read more about that, you can follow links from the website. And if you'd like to join us, you're very, very welcome. So as I mentioned at the beginning, exploring a theme here, so kind of recklessly following a theme through, kind of randomly gathered situations of the online Dharma hall. You may have heard the earlier parts, you may have not. Doesn't really matter. They each stand alone, but they also relate to each other. So we already touched on some of the earlier qualities, which is kind of, we could say, desiring the right thing, desiring freedom. Skillful desire, wishing for, aiming for, supporting what is fruitful, beautiful, supportive in our existence. The second quality is showing up, making the effort, persisting, even when it gets challenging, keeping going, even when I think I'm not going to make it, and just think, well, maybe just a little bit more, just a little bit more. So really making the effort. Being willing to be the one who makes the effort in a relationship, So we have a relationship to our practice. Takes dedication. And from dedication, hopefully, grows love and devotion and enjoyment, and it just starts to flow for itself. So, yeah. Now, the third quality is citta. I like to call it heart mind. Some call it mind, some call it heart. So it's kind of many, one of many words in the tradition that could be attributed the English word mind. We have also, along with citta, we have manas, which is kind of more like the intellect and emotions, the thinking, that kind of range. And then another one is related more, usually kind of related more to do with consciousness. You know, to be conscious, to be perceiving these things. And sometimes along with that, also the discernment quality. So we could say citta is one of those words that, you know, probably can't really be very well defined because of the fact that it doesn't actually define a thing. Yeah. And it actually doesn't even quite define a process. So kind of like that as an entryway in here is like if you come away with like, oh yeah, now I know what it is, then maybe you don't. And if you have a kind of a broad general sense in the same way as we might say, I know what a heart is, and not the anatomical heart, the kind of having heart, giving heart, you know, it's kind of a little bit undefinable, a little bit mysterious in a way. So in kind of some cases, we could say it's pointing towards the quality of the unfolding dynamics of various processes of mental and emotional activity, but it's none of those, and it's not even the process of it. Okay, so it's kind of something like the quality of that. In a sense, it's empty, which is to say, it neither is nor is not, but it's a useful way of looking at our experience. So, what's going on in the heart mind? Yeah, and it's a question, that's a question that has meaning. It doesn't kind of ultimately have definition. You can say, well, first bring me your heart mind, and then we'll have a look what's going on inside it. You know, it's kind of like something that it doesn't really make sense. Yeah. But it also does make sense. Now, what's going on in the heart mind today? It's like, that's a really meaningful and important question. Do I really have a heart and mind? Don't know. Yeah. We can get to know it perhaps as our mind state or mindset or heart vibration or however you want to put it, at any particular time. And you see that those things, they neither are or are not, and they all depend on how we relate to them and how we're relating to the world. So you can see how much fun we could have in the Shaping the World dropping group with a heart mind like this, yeah. How we can shape our experience, how it is shaped, how we can cultivate it to do different things. So kind of what we could say could be of real concern for us, and we want to pay attention to, you know, not concern as in worry, but like to the thing we are concerned to attend to, is are our deepest and most beautiful values and aspirations for our life aligned with, are they expressions of in our intentions and our actions? Do my intentions, do my actions in the world actually relate to my deepest values and aspirations? And so when they do, we would probably say the citta is in a good state. Yeah. It's heading in the right direction. It's becoming less contracted. We are less distracted. Yeah. We are less egotistical. We are more kind of balanced and aligned, yeah, and you kind of just feel that, yeah. So a lot of this, but not all of it, can be developed by supporting, encouraging, inviting in, or just allowing our intentions to align with our deepest values and with the wisdom that we have, yeah. And so a good example of this could be to become more free, yeah. Like my value is to be more free, and all of those beautiful intentions that people shared here, the love, the compassion, the openness, the space, the connection, the belonging, the groundedness, all expressions of freedom. Yeah, all expressions of a more free heart and mind. Okay. You'll know in life we have default settings, we kind of go back to the defaults, greed, aversion, delusion. And so it's really important that we have the persistence that I mentioned before, and we have the desire for that which is beautiful. And then we bring it into being, into the citta. The citta then needs to be an expression of a vehicle for the environment, the laboratory, of our desires and our efforts. So, taking a step back, those who were here in the earlier sessions may remember, or it may be kind of clear already, or you may just know it from elsewhere, the bases of success are often utilized as ways of really advancing our practice into kind of pretty sublime qualities of heart and mind. The jhanas, the absorptions into real depth and beauty. But they're also really useful for just, how's my practice going? How's my mindfulness going, or all the rest, yeah. So someone who's a real kind of meditation master, Tanisaro Bhikkhu, yeah, also called Ajahn Jeff, really translates citta in this instance just to intentness, yeah, our ability to be intentional in what we attend to and how we attend to it. And so if you're going subtler and subtler into the meditative realm, you'll notice that that becomes more and more important, and it becomes more and more subtle, the heart mind becomes more and more refined, and then we get more and more subtle, and we get more and more refined, more and more subtle, more and more refined, through the intentions opening and opening, releasing subtler and subtler dukkhas, stresses, resistance, agitations. So, we have that as a good indicator of like that within the citta to pay attention to is the intentionality. Yeah. So I'm also interested in how the wisdom quality comes in there. What we understand, and then how that comes through in intentionality into actions, And so the understanding, the wisdom quality in the heart mind, how that starts to shape more beautiful desires, how that starts to shape what we wish to put effort into, and how that starts to shape what we bring intentions towards. There's a beautiful sutta, often translated, its title is The Two Sorts of Thinking, but that title could equally be translated, and I'm sure someone's translated it this way, The Two Sorts of Intention. Yeah. Or another way, The Two Sorts of Resolve. Yeah. And basically, the two sorts are those that lead to dukkha, greediness, aversiveness, putting out bad vibrations by trying to harm others, and then those which bring release. It's basically just two sorts. Is this bringing dukkha or is this not bringing dukkha? Really simplifies the whole game. Yeah. So, are my intentions in alignment with my deepest values? And if those deepest values are in alignment with freedom, then that's a very simple kind of question, yeah. So do my intentions, do my actions that lead out from those intentions, do my ways of thinking that lead out from those intentions, sustain me, yeah. But there becomes this very interesting thing that we could oversimplify the recipe there and say, you just have to have good intentions, and then you have good actions, and then you have a good world. Yeah, so this whole idea of shaping the world, shaping our heart and mind, everything, intentions are really important, but we don't gain control of life just through intentions, yeah. It's not like, oh, and then everything fell in place because, that would be cosmically brilliant, but it doesn't seem to work that way. So I just want to mention something, it might be slightly distressing, but many of you may know that it was just a few days ago, it's 5 years and 4 days since Joe Cox was murdered in the UK by a kind of neo-Nazi affiliated person with other, mental health issues, whole kind of white supremacy troubling kind of ideas, and maybe it's worth not ignoring that this was, a woman being killed by a man. Within that whole kind of dynamic of things. But what's really touching and impressive for me, so I admit that's really a troubling situation. Yeah, thankfully it's a relatively rare occurrence, certainly in the realm of all the other things that are happening in the world. And there's a lot to take from this story that's actually really inspiring and speaks a lot about intentionality and purpose and meaning. So there's a number of things which could just be really touching and kind of impress on the heart. Something that also opens it really wide is the life that Jo Cox lived, working for Oxfam, supporting Syrian human rights, and many other things. You can take real heart from that. It's like, oh, there was a dedicated life. Also, what I find quite inspiring is the reaction on the day and subsequently of her widower husband. I don't know if you remember this. It was just really inspiring. Like right on the day, was like so much wisdom and compassion and understanding and space. And at her, I can't remember if it was at her funeral or if it was at the court case that so Brendan Cox, Joe Cox's widower, I think his name was also Cox, said that he felt only pity for the murderer, and expressed hope that his wife's death, that Joe's death will have meaning, in persuading people that we hold more in common than that which divides us. And I think it's just something really very, very deep, but also like kind of adding meaning to this event, yeah, I think that's something very, very inspiring to see. And I think there's a real seed of truth, and it was kind of been resonating in my mind, and I hadn't associated it knowingly with this anniversary, this sad anniversary. But in conversations recently with friends, we were talking about various things, and they were explaining to me why they think that, the world's going to hell in a handcart and various things, and it's like these people are like this, and other people, and I'm more like this. And I said to them, it's like, actually, I don't think it's that. I think it, so it's like, well, is it about religion and, this religion and that religion, they can't get along, and all the trouble in the world comes from, religions and their fights and blah, blah, blah. And I said, I think it's more that the human mind is obsessed by differences. And this conversation is also an example of it. It's like, us atheists over here and look at the religious people and say, look at those religious people fighting and blah, blah, blah. Just can't get along. The human mind, the cheetah, didn't develop to see similarities. Like it wasn't a kind of a skillful thing to learn. So we tend to see differences, And of course, this is wonderful for the discernment. And as we said, as Tanisara Bikku is pointing out, that intentionality and the subtleness and the refinement, and it's like, well, what if I just undo this bit? And what if I. And it's even really, really skillful. And the fourth basis of success is to do with that quality of discernment. But at what cost to the sense of harmonization, which is another really important factor in the meditation? Yeah. And of course, it's another really important factor in living a beautiful and sustainable and delightful life, that we can cooperate, not battle against. So kind of an intention that I have in my life is to borrow a U2 lyric, we are one, but we're not the same. And can I hold that space? Yeah, we're one here. It doesn't mean that we're all kind of like blurred into oneness. There's diversity, there's differences, but ultimately we hold so much more in common than that which divides us, or that which could ever divide us. Yeah. All living beings share so much in common. Yeah. But as I was implying a little bit earlier, it would be erroneous to think that I only need to make intentions and everything will fall into place. There's a lot more factors than what we're bringing. We're not in control. We're not in control of our life. And that's part of what really inspires me about Joe Cox's widower and his what he chose to say. Because I mean, that's some tough conditions to hold true to your deepest intentions. A good example of this is, a recent piece of research I was hearing, which reveals this kind of genetic tendency to increase hunger and lower the satiation levels for those people who end up getting kind of chronically overweight. Not just people, it's like whole kinds of reasons for variations in body types, and I'm in favor of all body types. But just saying that, this understanding, it's like, oh, there's a genetic thing happening there. And so it's not equitable across persons, like we have different genetic makeups, and it makes it much more difficult for some people to eat less. And this kind of like blaming and shaming for people to react certain ways. And we do the same thing in our meditation, like blaming and shaming myself for my mind thinking about other things. And then I choose, the most subtle object I can think of. Maybe I can just pay attention to the subtle movements of breath going in and out. And then the shopping list appears in my mind, and I say, bad mind, rubbish mind. You're no good at meditation. You should be able to pay attention to the subtle things. And the poor mind is just thinking, I wasn't made for this. I wasn't developed for this. And so it just takes a moment to kind of slip away, and we're going to follow those patterns. And if, you can see in this example, and I hope it's not, a bad example or a hurtful example to use, that this kind of like, oh, there's actually something genetically going on here that makes it very, very difficult to feel full and hear that message and feel like eating more. And the same thing we see, it just takes a momentary blip and we drift away in the meditation. How firmly we have to stay with that intentionality, so that we can actually sustain it more and more and more, deeper and deeper and deeper, more subtle and more refined. Very, very tricky. But what we have to do there also is enjoy the moments of being present. Yeah, enjoy the moments of being present. And I'll come on to that in a moment. So I just want to kind of just name out some of the other factors I've noticed recently in my practice have derailed my good intentions, right? The weather. We're really impacted by the weather. Yeah. And if we were to deny it, I think that we would, say, no, it doesn't make any difference to me. Sunshine, rain, fogginess, cloudiness. What that means is, if I've noticed it has an impact on my practice, I want to notice what it's like before I do my practice. Yeah? So have a little look out the window and see, okay, how's the atmospheric pressure? Because that's probably going to affect, where the heart and mind goes today. And then what posture I might take, or what practice I might do, right? To make it appropriate to the conditions that are there. It's like, okay, it's really cloudy, and I feel a bit cloudy too. So let's do something really, really refined and subtle and difficult, so that my mind wanders off almost immediately and kind of comes back at the end and says, are we done? It's like, yeah, did you have a nice nap? Yeah, I did. It was really good, thanks. So maybe I'll stand up, or maybe I'll do walking, or maybe I'll practice outside, maybe I'll take a layer off. And we relate, we respond to the conditions that I have. Okay. Another one, this probably never happens to you, but like, what happened to me yesterday? So I just reflect, well, how was yesterday? How did yesterday go? Am I feeling open in the heart mind? Am I feeling that I'm holding some residue from that? If it was a very difficult day and a difficult interaction, maybe I'll just switch, do some kind of forgiveness practice. That needs to get resolved. The heart mind needs to settle that situation. How I slept. So, oh, regardless of how I slept, my practice is my practice, my posture is my posture, this is just what I'm doing, How tired I am. And just as much the past, also the future. What do I have to do later on? Am I going to practice in a way? And this is something that, some of you will know, I do a lot of kind of social engagement retreats. And I really kind of questioned, like, what do we want to practice so that when we come out, that we often do a silent retreat before, 5 or 7 days silent retreat before. When we come out of that, I want us to feel empowered to act. Not that not doing is the way for real happiness, you know. So it's kind of like subtle things. It's like, so what do I have going on later on? Am I practicing in a way that's supportive and harmonic with that? Or is it out of tune with that? Yeah. So we get down, really down into the pragmatism here, yeah. And is there pain in the body? That's really going to affect my meditation, right? Probably notice that happens. The mind will go towards the pain. So it's good to have a practice that's willing to support those spaces. Sickness and health. Yeah. A local thing here, the noise in my environment. You know, I can't remember which session I mentioned it in, but you know, a couple of days ago, I was doing my meditation and people were smashing tiles off the bathroom. It's going, okay, might have to adjust my practice a little bit here. You know, but I can practice with that. But only with certain practices does it really harmonize, does it really become beautiful and beneficial. You know, it could be in the broader sphere, you know, mentioning, you know, Joe Cox's murder, for example. You know, what's happening politically, socially, environmentally, here? In this moment of time, you know, and with that, what I refer to as kind of the background radiation of hope and despair. You know, they speak about this kind of background radiation of the Big Bang out in the, and you know, just feel there is just a background radiation of hope and despair at any moment in the floats of life. Yeah, and of course, there's so much more that's going on there. Now, I think some would say, and with a lot of wisdom and with a lot of compassion and a lot of understanding, like, just let all those things go. Right? Just the meditation, let the meditation just unfold in that way. Don't bring your attention to them. And then when we don't bring our attention to something, it doesn't exist for us in the same way. Yeah? So don't make a big deal about it. Right? And in that way, we're not so grossly distracted by them, like the pain in the body, the weather of the whatever. And I think that's true. But we can't entirely stop them having an impact. Yeah, many of them. You know, we are basically water. The body is basically water. And if there's something happening atmospherically in the weather, yeah, the body knows what weather is doing. Yeah. You don't really need to even look out the window. You can feel it. Oh, yeah, it's a bit cloudy today. Or it's a really bright, clear, sunny day. And there's a brightness also in the body sense. So we need a quality there that's kind of equanimity born of wisdom. Yeah, I really loved the expression from Grace. You know, the joy and equanimity. So here, kind of equanimity and wisdom together. So it's not indifference. But it's not, you know, saying, oh, well, this moment's completely different. Yeah. They're like cloudiness, sunniness. It's like, oh, yeah, they're different and they need different qualities. But shaping our intentions to meet the reality we experience. Because, as we'll remember, we want to bring in good intentions, we want them to be based in our wisdom. What we understand. We want to be based in what we really feel we want to cultivate. But it's not just going to flip a switch. Yeah, there's a lot more factors in this dynamic network of karmic unfoldings. A few things that help, you know, kind of like general things that help. Let the wisdom go deep. Yeah. It's not like set a good intention. Yeah, that one does sound quite good. Let it go deep. No, this is what's meaningful to me. So if it's meaningful to you'll probably find it actually goes quite deep within you. And just take a moment to feel that. What do I really understand? What do I really understand? Oh, everything changes. How do I understand that? Everything changes. Do I sit with that for a moment? Let the wisdom touch us. So I say something I've said many times before, and I think I probably borrowed it from Rob Babea. I borrow quite a lot of his things, but I don't quite remember where it came from. Yeah, I think this is certainly rooted in him, but perhaps my own words. The insights, right, are not to be like the unread books, yeah, that we put on our bookshelf. Yeah, so I can see some of you have books behind you. Have you read them all? Some of them we bought because they really liked the title and we thought we'd get around to reading. And sometimes our insights, our wisdom becomes like that as well. Yeah, I've got a really deep insight about how everyone is deserving of compassion, and that's why it's in the center of my bookshelf, but I don't read it. Yeah, so it should be lived. It should be sitting next to you. It should be open, maybe face up, face down on your bedside table. Yeah, it should be ready to be picked up, lived. So insights need to be lived. Another quality, the insights, the wisdom, they need to be seen many times. So insights arise in our practice. And it can be kind of like, oh, great, tick, I've seen that thing. I've seen that everything changes. I've really understood it now. It's kind of like when we watch a film for the second or the third time, you suddenly think, oh, now I get it. Because I'm not so torn, caught up in the novelty or in the story, I actually absorb more of the whole implications of this. Yeah. So it's like that book that we read again. It's like, ah, oh, this time it's going in deeper. I'm understanding it more. So that's kind of around the wisdom thing. And I'd say along with that takes the insight, yeah, the understanding of how we function, or more or less how any living entity functions, right? Which is we tend to do what feels enjoyable. So if you manage to cultivate in your meditation anything that's even remotely more enjoyable than how it was when you came in, you know, we manage to be intentional against the odds, you know, against the weather, the politics, the people, you know, next door and what they're up to and who it was yesterday, who it would be later, you know, all of those things. It's like, ah, I actually managed to cultivate some well-being. Enjoy it. Linger in it. Yeah. Kind of too much of the time we're doing kind of bad puppy training, you know. It's like, oh, bad puppy mind coming back from here, from that long distraction, whatever, and you're like completely missing. This is the moment for praise, you know. The puppy just came back, and here you are saying, oh, coming back, are you? Well, I want you to understand, coming back is a bad idea, you know. It's like, no, you've come back. Okay, good, good. Now don't run off again. Stay here. Lots of appreciation. Lots of treats, in a sense. And what's a treat? Relax. Relax the body. Have a nice breath. They exist. Enjoyable breaths, you know, can be done, yeah? What would be more enjoyable? Usually, I think deeper, smoother. But anything you can appreciate about this moment. It's, oh, I'm really happy to be back, yeah? That is what sends the signals and encourages the continuity of the intentionality, yeah? So there are lots and lots of factors, yeah, lots and lots of factors that are playing in here. So we have to be as clear a sign of one of them, yeah, clear as we can, a sign that yes, this is the right stuff, right? Because there's going to be such a mess of possible signals to pick up on. Lots and lots to do there. Okay, so there's still plenty more that we could say around this theme, but that's what I wanted to put into the space for now, I think, is what would be helpful. And I'm happy to hear any kind of reflections or clarifications or questions or anything from you that may be helpful in that field, or anything from your life and practice. Yes, please. Yeah, lovely. So perhaps there's kind of like two parts to this. On the one hand, there's kind of a thing of like, what on earth is an intention? And we could even take it further. It's like, who even actually makes an intention? And can we even know what our intentions are? So that's a whole area there, which kind of underpins then the engagement with the intention not to interfere. And how we hold that intention when that's our intention in our practice. And there was a third aspect, which was the second thing that you were saying there, the intention, not clinging to intentions. Yeah. So basically, I think that if we start to investigate what really is an intention, we're only getting what we could say is like a sense of our intention. Yeah. And the sense of, it's quite important to kind of understand, okay, so this is just like a sense of what my intention is. But I call like this is my intention because, you know, this is how we kind of speak usually. Yeah, we don't dissect the moment quite so rigorously. Yeah. And it's good to know, okay, this is my intention. This is what I want to see more of. This is what I want to develop. This is what I want to see come into the world. In that sense, meaning intentionality there. Whenever there's an action or an activity or a moment of attention, there has to be intention there. But I don't think we'll notice ourselves deciding to listen to this, deciding not to listen to that, deciding to see things, deciding to prioritize this, deciding. But we can keep investigating that because they're really, really important. The subtlest levels of intention will probably only be revealed in the quietest moments of meditation, right? Because there'll always be other stuff which will take our attention accidentally, purposefully. So there's kind of unintended moments of attention. There's just like clusters and clutterings of all kinds of stuff there. So I think to really know what your intention is would probably mean that there's almost nothing else going on. And then that's a pretty deep state. And if you're going to wait for a pretty deep state to know your intentions, then your intentions are not going to be shaped most of the rest of the time. And I think it's probably quite important to be cultivating things. So I hope that makes some sense. So kind of naming the territory. The second thing I would say is like, well, if you have the intention to not interfere, then that's lovely as an intention. Are you going to be able to do it or not? Will be an it kind of a as an entire goal? I don't know. I don't know if you can do that, because what you'll find is there will be, you know, what I call default settings that will unfold there in the heart and mind. It's like, I want that state. I don't want that state. And did I mean to do that? Or is that a residue intention? Is that, you know, something that I really clearly wanted in this moment? And so it feels to me that because there are subtle things unfolding, it's good for me to make a clear intention towards that which I want to see more of. And so there's kind of various definitions of what meditation means, but the word from the Pali, bhavana, is related to a sense of cultivation, like cultivating something. And the sense of cultivation means kind of bringing into being, and bringing into being probably then means some form of action, activity, and those activities are always underpinned by intentions. So there's that side of it. So I'm not making an argument for or against, but if we make the intention not to interfere, then I think that would take quite a lot of work to keep that intention alive and making sure that there aren't any kind of subtle forms of interference going on, because otherwise we might just be like letting go of the steering wheel and letting the car drive itself, but then what's actually driving that car? So that's something to be alert to in that practice. It might work for a long way before it starts to feel problematic, because one of the key intentions that we would be dropping down there is a kind of reactivity to life which becomes through in a form of rejection, you know, kind of subtle forms of rejection. I think also there's possibilities that we can lower that levels of rejection and reactivity in other ways, and then that kind of relates to the third part of the answer, the second part of the question, which was, what about clinging and craving to intentions? So, yeah, clinging and craving to intentions would probably be bad news, particularly because we're only actually clinging to a sense of the intention, because I think that's the only thing that we can perceive. And also, that would be incredibly difficult to do. So, what we're possibly more likely to be clinging to would be the outcomes from those intentions. And so what we're trying to understand, or what I'm trying to express here, is that we are not in control. Like, we're making a really clear intention, but I also understand I'm not in control. But that doesn't mean because I can't get in control, I'm not going to have any intentions, because I understand there are going to be intentions, and what I want my intentions to be is an upgrade from the default settings. So, rather than have aversiveness, I want to have metta and love. Rather than having greed, I want to have renunciation and generosity. And so if I say, for me, if I said I'm just going to go with the flow, I might end up back in the quagmire and not actually with the flow. So I think there has to be an area where I'm more or less clinging to my intentions, but I'm not actually clinging to the outcomes from those intentions. Like I am fixing myself in alignment, in connection. These are my intentions, and it's not the what was his name? What's that? The Marx brother thing. It says something like, "These are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have others." It's like, these are my intentions, and I'm pretty clear about them, and these are the ones I'm aiming for, and for this period of time, this is what I'm doing. But I don't think I'm in control. I appreciate that I feel like I've got my hands on the driving wheel, but I'm not fully convinced they're connected to the wheels. It's like sometimes it makes a difference, sometimes it doesn't, and life kind of steers itself. But my intentions are really clear, and I'm going to keep playing along and engaging and developing them so that I can be as, supportive of those who really deeply inspire me, and express like, okay, so there's someone who can keep their intentions alive in the really difficult times of life. I don't know if that responds to it, and I'm really happy to hear your responses back. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful reflection. And if it when beginning again, begin again with maybe like a school that's really into beginning again. That doesn't put you back, in a sense of like, oh, well, everything you've learned is wrong. But actually is like, there's this whole kind of Zen principle, of the beginner's mind. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. And then therefore, don't be an expert, And so this kind of sensibility where we're like, oh, here's a whole kind of area or space that I thought I understood. And then when I investigated a bit further, I see I don't. I think that there are some people who will offer us something that's very immediate and accessible. And I'm not meaning kind of like, oh, they're just spoon feeding us, Dharma practice. But we have to understand there's no such thing as Dharma. There's no such thing as Buddhism. There's this, the people who do that TV show, do the research behind this TV show, QI, this kind of comedic, kind of quite interesting program. So they have a podcast which is called, No Such Thing as a Fish. Because there is no such thing as a fish. You can't say, well, this is what a fish looks like. Like, they're all so diverse and different and in such different ranges and depending on their lifestyles and their environments. There's also no such thing as Dharma. So if someone says, I am a Dharma teacher, and someone else says, I'm a Dharma teacher too, and then they start teaching something, and you're like, well, hang on. Do you mean the same thing when you say different words? Say, for example, everyone's talking about freedom from dukkha, but what does dukkha mean for you? If we say dukkha means suffering, then as soon as we're not suffering, we're free. We're free of dukkha. But I think if you take it more refined, the dukkha that the Buddha is talking about is actually any appearance at all is stressful compared to the peace and the calm and the tranquility, and the delight and the harmonization that actually comes from the non-experience of time and space. This is what Nibbana is pointing towards. So if we define dukkha differently, then what the Buddha is saying, freedom from dukkha, is really shifts. And so that's like a core thing. And I don't think you'll find a collective agreement either in the person themselves or in what they teach across, a whole range of, say, Dharma teachers who are all clearly teaching freedom from dukkha. But if we're not even defining the same thing, so then we have like intention. So what's intention? Is it the subtle thought beyond which we can even perceive, or is it that thing that says, I want to be happy? It's not, so it's complex, But then we need to get a simple footing into this pathway. So it becomes this interesting dynamic dance between that which we can understand and do something about, and also this kind of field of mystery, in which our practice sits. And so, if you feel there's some usefulness to going back to basics, I think there always is, and I think you're absolutely right to name that. But you might not find the answers for what you're looking for because I think that maybe you have advanced questions that you may not find answered in a beginner's class. Yeah. So it's this kind of combination there. And, I probably have more of a trait for kind of muddying the waters than for clarifying them. But like, I feel that it's kind of helpful to just kind of pull out the bits and say, what's this bit doing here? And sure, it makes a mess. And I'm perhaps a messy practitioner, but I find it's helpful to then kind of like, oh, I see. And I'll put it back in for where it's useful. Kind of bring that intentionality, that investigative quality. But others will want something else. And the direction of their practice could be much more towards the simplification. And that's right at times, or right for all of the times, right for different people. And so I'm not meaning my, look how different everyone is teaching, but just not to mistake. So, like in that delightful, I think it's a delightful lyric, we are one, but we're not the same. Yeah, we're all looking for freedom, but what we mean by freedom doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. We're all looking for release from patterns of behavior, but the patterns of behavior that we see as problematic, not necessarily the same. So, yeah. I feel like a symphony that doesn't resolve, kind of like, ta-da, we're kind of, oh, we've left it on a major seventh again. So, no, not going to play that note. Not going to try and resolve it. And it's like, okay, the practice continues. There's more to explore. But yeah, really lovely, delightful exchange. Thank you. Yeah, is there anything else anyone wishes to share in the space? It's very open and welcoming. Hello. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that and sharing the sense of kind of openness and delight that can come from hearing a phrase or a sense of experience that just suddenly resonates with us and utilizing that, and then we can also see it's like, oh, okay, so then those become insights for us. They become ways of developing more sense of freedom and well-being in that moment, that expression, that felt sense of the insight. And I think that what you're describing in terms of just breathing with that insight, bringing it into being. One of the phrases Rob used is like, can we live as if that insight was still fresh? Just like reintroduce it. It's like, well, if that insight were true here, how would I see? How would I look? How would I relate? And that can be a really helpful thing to do. It's like, oh yeah. Well, let's say that's still true as it felt that moment when it really arose and felt really true. And as you say, changed a lot of the dynamics of body, heart, and mind in that moment. So, oh, yeah. Well, it can't have only been true then. If it's an insight, it's also true now. And even if I don't feel it and I don't feel the space of it, can I live like it's true? Can I wear it? Can I look through it? Can I listen with it? Yeah. But it's an art, it's a. We're really then intentionally cultivating probably something quite radically different. Because if insight was already present, then we'd be feeling all of that freedom. But yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's really delightful. Okay, yeah. Anyone else like to share anything at this time? Yeah, please. Yeah, maybe it makes sense. So, I think you're so kind of just reflecting it back momentarily. So, kind of reflecting on the challenges, the difficulties of bringing through intentionality into our life. It being complex enough to kind of bring into our meditative practice where, things are quieter, are more subtle than elsewhere. And we could say, as I was saying, if you want to get really clear about what your intentions are, then you're going to have to get rid of a lot of mental clutter and have a lot of silence so that you can actually notice something that's more subtle and more quiet. But then on the other hand, it sounded like then you're talking about your life, your daily life, and like how to bring intentions there. And yet it sounds like, working with XR and supporting Myanmar, which, big problems in the world, the persecutions that are happening in Myanmar and the climate catastrophe that we're kind of going towards, and our governments and the powerful going to do enough. So that takes sustained intentionality. It also takes creativity. It's like, well, what is the right response so that those who have a significant power on what unfolds will listen, and that can include, the collective humanity, that we as a people say, this isn't okay, and move forward. And I just wonder if what is the kind of the crux of the issue, which, and I don't want to oversimplify it, maybe it is just in the realm of intention, but it might be that meeting of intention and results. So here's my intention. It's clear what my intention is. I care for the environment, or I care for other human beings. I care for those who, because you've been in certain places, you have a particular resonance with certain peoples, and care, particularly about their situation. I'm sure you care in general about everyone. Then, I looked there and I was like, so here's my intentions, but are they actually changing anything? So are these the right intentions? And then we get involved in kind of a broader question of like, so I'm placing my intentions, but is that making a big difference? Because our intentions are one of those drops that are filling the water pot, But, you put a drop in a water pot, and let's say the water pot's quite large, I'm not going to see for a while that my drops are making any difference. And then it becomes complex, right? So then, is there something I need to change in the way that my intentions are expressed? So the way my intentions come into action so that they are more effective. And the beautiful thing that you're engaged in is collective activity. So there's mass movements here that we can kind of feel supported and nourished in. But is it going to make a difference? We don't know. But it feels like it's clear to you, and I think it's clear to all of us, our step-by-step intentionality is not causing harm. So there's this moment in the two sorts of intention sutta, let's call it that now, where the Buddha says, I could maintain these good intentions towards freedom. So it's thoughts of renunciation, it's thoughts of kindness, it's thoughts of compassion, it's thoughts of care into the world. And they will not cause trouble for me, they will not cause trouble for others. And so I see no harm from doing that, having those intentions, bringing those intentions into being. And so just to feel encouraged and supported in doing that. But then he says, and at a certain time also, even let go of that. Even let go of that. Give yourself some time where you're not being so focused, directed, and intentional, jolly, and actually releasing into something more peaceful. So even the most beautiful qualities of heart and mind are not in alignment with the most peaceful that's possible for us. And so making sure we have the nourishment of those times as well. Whatever that means for us, however that intention takes its shape. Thank you. I think that's a beautiful point to leave the session, in that sense of the ways that we support each other to be our own unique shape, to bring into being our own unique intentionality, that kind of collectively we can be so diverse and also so gathered in a kind of a unified community, in a supportive environment. And may the support of each other support your deepest intentions. And real deep gratitude to everyone for being here in support, in practice. And look forward to see you again. Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.